Big Ten Plus 4 is a member of Odd Pods Media and ASAP All Sports All Plays Network.
Welcome into Big Ten Plus 4, College Sports with a Midwest Perspective, Blue Collar and Blue Blood. I'm Dalton Shetler, just there in the middle. If you're joining us on video, Tony Hollinsworth, and there on the far end, Sam Sprunger. Boys, how we doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Doing good. Sam, you?
I'm a bit on the mend. I got a real my oldest brought a cold into the house, and then, of course, me never going out much, other than to, run errands and stuff because I work from home. I got the cold. So
it's the one time you've been exposed. And so your body couldn't.
Correct. Yes. I basically live in a bubble, but
that's pretty much where my wife is at right now too. She's dealing with something because she also works remotely. So there's a little exposure.
Yeah. That's all right.
But hey, we're all fighting through. So, that's right. Thanks for being a trooper, Sam.
Yeah.
Well. Well, and just like that, Big Ten football is back, boys, because we had punts galore. I mean, it was as Big Ten gets in week one. Iowa wins one the old-fashioned way with a field goal and two safeties to beat South Dakota State 7-3 in a nail-biter. Rutgers is punting on fourth and goal. I mean, we had as many good Big Ten stories as we could have asked for.
Dalton, the Iowa defense beat two offenses on Saturday. They beat their own offense and South Dakota's, the state's offense. 4-3, both games. Does Iowa get two wins for that?
No.
They should, right?
That was bad. You collectively got 7 points in the most difficult way you could ever find possible.
The most traditional scoring amount you got in scoring three different times. For the longest time, it was 5-3, like, and I'm like,
they only got a touchdown.
Yeah, well, I kept seeing, 5-3, and I'm like, oh, they've got a lefty warming up in the bullpen, and they're going to bring him in to close it out, and then... Oh yeah.
Well, part of the beauty of that too was that, like, downstairs in my setup, I'm kind of looking at it over there. I have two TV screens. On the big one was 5-3 Iowa South Dakota State in the fourth quarter and the slobber knocker of a game. On my left screen was North Carolina and Appalachian State that finished 63-61, where Appalachian State scored 40 points in the fourth quarter. And you're just sitting there and you're like, this is why college football is just magnificent, because this is the same game being played by these institutions. This is amazing.
They're using the same size ball and everything. No, but seriously, when it comes to Iowa, they've got a big problem if they're not able to put together more than 3 points against. And don't get me wrong, South Dakota State is a good team. They traditionally are, but you know what? You should be able to put together more than 3 points against South Dakota State. It's confusing to me. Maybe dad needs to do some firing of some offensive coaches.
And at least even, defensively they were in the game. And like we talked about, the defense at least got them, 4 points, which is more than what their offense did.
It was needed to win.
To a point. It was needed to win. To a point, even then, it's like you kind of expect a little bit more from the defense as well. Like, the defense did hold up their end of the bargain and did more. But it's like, okay, you're a Power Five, top school. And you're basically getting pushed around by South Dakota State. And to a lot of people that I was talking to and that I've seen, they're like, South Dakota State was the better team on that field. And it's like, yeah, kind of. Like, looking at it, it's like, that was really, really bad.
Well, and again, part of why this is the most Big Ten-iest of Big Ten games, the true MVP of the game was the punter.
Yeah,
I mean, that was absolutely the case. Like, we keep saying the defense gave him the 4 points, and we're right to an extent, but the punter put him down there.
I was going to say he had to set him up.
I mean, I think he had what, like eight punts inside the 20, seven or eight punts inside the 20. I mean,
that's a good season. You know, if you have eight really good inside, you know, inside the 10 or whatever, but like he did it in one game.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I put eight inside the 20.
The Ray Guy Award watch list sent out recognition for week one, and half of them were the Big Ten. There were eight punters recognized, and four were the Big Ten. Penn State's, Iowa's, Michigan State's, and Rutgers.
They say, was Rutgers, since they decided to punt from like a fourth and goal?
I love that.
Explain this situation, because I'm envisioning one thing. I want to know if it's the same.
So this is sort of verbatim, because I don't have it in front of me, but it was first and goal from the 10, and they had an offensive pass interference, and they're at the 25. And then they get called for a holding, which put them back to the 35. Okay. And there were a couple of rushes in between for basically no gain. And in third and goal from around the 35, the quarterback was sacked. So it was fourth and goal from the 37, and they decided to punt, which the punt god, or AKA the Aussie assassin, Adam Korsak, pinned them at the 3. So it was ultimately a pretty good decision.
So it was ultimately a 7-yard punt.
Yes.
from the original line of scrimmage.
From the original line of scrimmage, a 7-yard punt. They were on the 10 on first and goal. They punted to the 3 on fourth and goal. And a whole lot happened in between.
Yes.
What came to mind was I don't even remember. It was Louisiana Tech and maybe Tulane or something. But Louisiana Tech had the ball first and goal at like the 7 or something. Well, they had one of those blooper style fumble montages, basically trying to grab a fumble on a strip sack. Or a handoff fumble. Doesn't matter. The ball was fumbled. They fumbled it and all the way back to inside the other 10.
Oh, no.
I've seen a few of those. I've even seen them professionally.
And they had third and goal from like their own 7. It makes your head hurt.
I know. Trying to compute that is
when you said fourth and they punted on fourth and goal, I'm like, did they fumble it and it go back 50 yards? I could see that happening. It's happened before.
Well, honestly, I kind of thought even worse, and a lot of it was just one of these just like mind blown type things. I legitimately thought they were almost basically at the goal line, if not even closer. And Rutgers is just like, yeah, we're gonna punt it. I'm like, why?
Like, is your like kicker a bad hurt? Joke like, you or something?
Like is your kicker hurt? Like, you don't even want to like let your punter like try the field goal, or you like just give somebody an opportunity to kick? Like, why are you punting?
It's simply amazing. While we're on the topics of punting, though, I do want to bring up that Iowa is obviously known to be this kind of team that's punting the ball all the time. There was a stat on Twitter, I believe it came from Matt Benson, that since 2020, there are, I believe, six teams that have won two games while punting eight or more times since 2020. So that we're talking the last 3 years, counting this year. But there is one team that has won six times while punting eight or more times since 2020. That's Iowa. Iowa is 6-1 in games since 2020 where they've had to punt eight or more times. So they want this. Like, this is what the Kirk
they were
Ferentz
playing
model
their
is.
Game.
That's right.
Literally. Set the precedence and stick with it, Kirk Ferentz.
I love the Iowa
like
fan.
How bad is it if you're the other team? Like, you start keeping track of the punts.
Yeah, we can't let them punt eight times, guys. Let them get the first.
Let them get the first.
Like it gets up to six. You're like, oh god, they're up to six. Defense, stop it. Let them score. Stop it.
Real quick, while we're talking about crazy games, this moves away from the Big Ten for a moment. But did we all take in the LSU Florida State game together?
I watched part of it. I cannot believe I missed the ending.
That was,
I cannot believe it.
Tony, if you want to set it up for the people, the ending of that game, because that was as classic a college football game as you can imagine.
Up, he's on delay.
Oh, yeah. So LSU managed to get the ball back. You know, So initially, they, if I remember right, they fumbled, and then Florida State got the ball, and it's like, okay, this is game over. Well, Florida State then immediately fumbled back. So LSU's in prime position. LSU scores the touchdown, surprisingly enough. Yeah. And then right at the extra point, it's like 1 second left on the clock. LSU goes to kick it, and it's blocked. And then that's the end of the game as far as, you know, Florida versus LSU. So that's why it was 24-23. And I remember watching this, and I was like, wow. And that was a bad game on LSU's part. There's muffed punts. It was a lot of really just bad football from LSU this weekend. I was like, that's really, really bad.
I have never seen a game end on a blocked extra point that would have tied it. I've never seen that.
And, you know, that being said, like when that moment happened, my jaw dropped and I went to surrender Cobra for no reason. Like, I'm a neutral party here. I don't really care. But it's just still the moment got me. But like even before that extra point was kicked, like my wife was sitting on the couch and she goes, I don't think he's making this. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah. And so like she noticed how intoxicated the game was. And she's like, oh, no, this clownery. This thing isn't done yet. And sure enough, the blocked extra point.
Did you look at her and wonder how she knew that?
I know.
Like, you know, give her side eye. Like,
Do we have cable upstairs and we're streaming down here? Yeah,
we're on a delay, aren't we?
Nice. No. But it just fit in with the theme of that game. So as we're talking about Iowa being nearly undefeated and a playoff team while punting eight or more times in a game and Rutgers punting on fourth and goal, still not the most unique thing, because that LSU Florida State game took the cake for the most college football thing possible.
Well, it's like Tony said, you know, that the LSU muffed the punt at the 10. And Florida State recovered it and fumbled it on the one. They were salting the game away.
LSU had to go 99 yards.
In like a minute and 7 seconds.
When their offense had been so constipated throughout the entire game.
Yeah. And then to score on the last play. And it just because I watched the replay of it, you know how ESPN or those channels will replay it later at night. I get up stupid early, so I catch the ending. So I ended up watching. I'm like, man, I missed a way. It just blew me away that it was they fumbled the ball with like 2 minutes left.
Yep.
That was the game. Florida State only needed to kick a field goal. They didn't even need to score a touchdown.
Yeah.
And then they ended up fumbling at the one. And then he, you know, Brian Kelly was going, oh, thank God we scored. We'll take it to overtime. We'll take our chances. And then he misses the extra point. It's like,
and it's the second kick that was blocked that game for LSU, which, by the way, when it comes to play-by-play guys, like there's an elite class in my mind, and Joe Tessitore is in that class.
I love Joe Tessitore.
Yeah. And as they're lining up for that extra point, he goes, now remember, he's already had one block tonight. The snap back, the kick. It's blocked. I was like, oh, my God, he set it up perfect.
Is that the equivalency of, oh, he's made 42 straight free throws?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But just reverse. He's already had one block. Well, okay, there it is.
Oh, yeah, and it's funny. Jim Nance and Tony Romo on CBS have even done the same exact thing. They'll say something, and they're like, ah, you jinxed him. It's gonna happen, and they're like, we'll see. And it's like, nope, we haven't jinxed him yet. Not yet. I won't say it next time.
Not yet. Like, after he makes it, okay. Well, then I'll say it again later. And yeah, well,
that's yeah. I know there's mixed feelings on Tony as an analyst, but I appreciate the new perspective and the new way of doing it. Like, it's something different than just the cookie cutter. Like, a play happens, let me dissect it. Like, he's actually trying to take you through from a different angle. So I'm all in with new when it comes to sports.
I don't ever hate people or hate the way people do things because they're trying something new. It's just when they're annoying when they do it. Chris Collinsworth is annoying. Okay. He's annoying every time he opens his mouth. he reminds me of what Bill Walton was before he turned into the cool Bill Walton analyst. The one where he was talking about when I played in the NBA. And Chris Collinsworth is much the same. This is the same.
Here's a guy.
Here's a guy.
So I don't know if he's trying to be like Madden-ish, you know, like, here's a guy, you know, like, you know, that's Madden did that because that was John Madden, you know, but don't try to mimic him. You can't do it. Be more understanding, be more yourself. Don't try to overdo stuff. You're not the best ever. Or you would be all Hall of Famer, Chris Collinsworth. You're not. So let's ease it up a bit.
Okay. So real quick, before we close out the first segment,
and Chris was lucky enough to have Al Michaels.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Before we close out the first segment, and I think Tony's experience in this too, we do have Tony on a little bit of delay. So I will point to each of you to get you to answer. That way we don't step on each other here. But as we close out week one, biggest takeaways from Big Ten football, it can be really anything, but something that stood out to you besides the quirkiness that we've talked about here early on, something you want to bring up and talk about from week one. We'll start with you, Sam.
I actually put this out on a Facebook reel that I think I overestimated at this time, maybe the level of output from Ohio State. I thought they were going to be mid-season game one, and it took some time. Don't get me wrong, I also underestimated Notre Dame, but at the same time, I just think that Ohio State, they're gonna be as good as I expect them to be, but it just they needed that warm-up game. Yes, number five Notre Dame was their warm-up game, and they still won by 11 points, you know. And so and I think Notre Dame, if they can beat like Clemson, I think they'll probably be in the talk for the playoff.
Well, and that's part of this too, is one of my big takeaways is that I think there are three elite teams in college football right now, and then somebody will be ushered into that fourth spot unless things look different. Clemson didn't blow me away. Nope. Notre Dame could still compete for that spot, to your point. And you're right. I would have thought Ohio State's offense would have played better. I think a lot of credit goes to Notre Dame's defense and how much I underestimated Notre Dame as well. Mm-hmm. But I was impressed with Ohio State's defense. I mean, that was the Achilles heel coming in. They had a new defensive coordinator in Jim Knowles, and I thought they played pretty well. I see what you're saying there.
And it's one of those that if you're going to be slower on one side of the ball, you want to be slower on the offense in getting into stride. You know what I mean? So your offense can take a little bit of time normally to ramp it up to its peak, whereas your defense needs to be going from day one, and it looked like they were pretty darn good. So I'm still anticipating Ohio State being number one in the country. And I tell you what, Georgia, to me, the way they dismantled Oregon with their offense, they scored on seven straight. That was their knock last year, was they couldn't produce points at will like most offenses could. Now they're going to have one really good defense, not as good as last year's, but their offense is going to be able to score, because Oregon, while they're not always good on defense, they're not horrid. Like they're normally pretty decent, and Georgia put it to them. I think that you're right. There are three elite teams, and then that fourth one's going to sneak in.
And real quick before we flip over to Tony, feeling the temperature on Purdue in the Big Ten West. Obviously, we talked after Purdue dropped to Penn State to open the season. Moving forward, though, Purdue's schedule, not too shabby. I mean, they have two East crossover games that play more in their favor. They still have to beat a lot of the teams in the West. But how do you feel about Purdue, Pete, and the Boilermakers this year still?
Oh, my big thing is as long as they can still establish and the coaching decisions in high pressure times need to get better than they were against Penn State. I don't doubt that they won't get better, or they will get better, but that needs to improve. And their running game needs to establish more, because you need to be able to be confident on your running game to salt away a game, and they weren't. So that as long as they can correct that, I'm not worried. I think they were sloppy, but it was their first week. I think that can shore up and get better. So I still feel good about Purdue.
And I don't know that the running game is necessarily bad. I just don't think they elected to use it. King right. Daru was running fairly well. So I think it's just about making that happen in the spots.
I think Jeff Brohm needs to realize that a little bit. I think he's still a little maybe gun shy too. So he needs to get better, and the running game will too.
And by the way, for context for new listeners, Sam is a Purdue fan and absolutely. Also picked Purdue to win the West. So that's why we're really banging the Purdue drum, pun intended. Yeah,
every week we're going to talk about Purdue because you want to make sure that I can defend myself.
It is, Tony's got an interest in Michigan State. Michigan State opens up with a 35-13 win over Western Michigan. Tony, any thoughts on Michigan State, or is there anybody else that jumped off the page to you in week one?
I thought Michigan State did look good. I know we saw Snow, our linebacker, went down. I know our safety Henderson is out for a while. But again, they look good. And I know you had talked about it last show, how we were kind of worried about Central Michigan's, you know, run game, which I did watch a little bit. They got a few off, but it wasn't like they went ballistic, and you know, it was still a pretty low scoring game. So I think Michigan State's still going to be pretty fine this year. We'll have to see how it goes. I would say two of the other takeaways, one's Big Ten related, one's not. You kind of mentioned how Clemson didn't really stand out to you, and they really didn't. The only thing that stood out to me is that Clemson is going to kind of remind me a little bit of Georgia last year, but their offense is much less talented than what Georgia had last year, because defensively, Clemson's defense was carrying them against Georgia Tech, and I was watching them, and it was like, it's not like Georgia Tech's ever like the bottom of college football. You know, they're, you know, like mid to almost bottom of the ACC, but it was like this Clemson defense is the only thing that's keeping them even remotely in the game. Cause I was watching how bad, you know, DJ Uiagalelei was trying to move the ball against Georgia Tech's defense, and it was not happening. The other one that is Big Ten related, can Jim Harbaugh pick a quarterback? Because I don't know if you gentlemen saw this against Colorado State. It was like everything Michigan was doing was right. And it was like, what, midway through the third quarter, Jim's like, all right, JJ, get out there. I'm like, what are you doing? No. Like, if this was every year time, like, all right, Cade, this is what we're going to have you do. We're going to see how you do in this situation. Like, this is what we're going to set up. Like, you were just making Colorado State your practice squad. Like, just go do it.
Well, and that's the case for, I mean, this upcoming weekend too, where JJ is going to start. But as Jim said in his postgame presser, Cade will play. So JJ is going to start, and Cade will come in and play at some point. I mean, this is also part of the byproduct of when you have four home games at the beginning of the year, and your spread was 30-some points in game one. Your spread this week is above 50 points. I think it's a 51-point spread. They're favored against Hawaii. And so, really, it's just a couple of jamborees to open up the year for Michigan, and that's how Jim Harbaugh is treating it.
Yeah, I get it, but it's also like, dude, you said, you know, Cade's going to start, JJ's going to be second, and then, you know, you'll pick a quarterback by week three. It's like, I think this is just one of those, I would be willing to bet next week, Jim's like, I still don't know. I might have to give it another week. No, Jim, we need you to make a decision. Like, pick one. Just pick one. Doesn't matter who, just pick one. You're set no matter what.
Is he really at the I don't care point to where he's like, we'll play it as long as we can. You know, we'll just go flip-flopping back and forth until, you know, we get to the point where we've lost a couple of games and we're completely out of it. And then I'll just I don't understand this at all.
Well, that's kind of my thing, too, is and I don't know if it's so much as a not caring point as much as it is we're having a hard time making a decision because both quarterbacks are playing well. But I refer and redirect back to last year. You look at Michigan State heading into 21. They were between Peyton Thorne and Temple transfer Anthony Russo. Uh-huh. And the staff said, like, look, guys, this is seriously neck and neck getting into the season. Like, these two are close. And then they were counting reps in practice. They charted everything. And Thorne beat Russo, but it was just by a couple points. Like, it was a hair that Thorne won that starting job, but they picked a quarterback and it worked out. They went 11-2 and they rode with Thorne the whole way because he was playing at an elite level. what's happening here a little bit different. And look, I'm not to say that this doesn't end up well, because you've got two really good quarterbacks, but this is going to be, as you get into Big Ten season, this will have to be managed differently. And I don't know if the trigger gets pulled or what's going to happen when we get to Big Ten play. You can survive this non-conference portion of your schedule doing what you're doing and really doing whatever you want to do. But when you get into Big Ten play, there's going to have to be a decision.
Well, and it's not like there's a Big Ten rule in place or anything. It's just, you're not going to win a championship with flopping back and forth. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to break the mold and, oh, we designed something new. No, it's just not going to happen. You're going to get into a situation where you need an established quarterback with confidence that he's going to be there. Mm-hmm. And it's just not going to happen if you keep doing this. Anyways.
All right.
I hope for the sake of history that there's another Appalachian State game, maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
Right. Hawaii's revenge tour from Vanderbilt is to, you know, dismantle Michigan. That watch Hawaii just be the team that just upsets.
The Bows come into Ann Arbor.
I wish it was a 50 point.
Yes.
Underdog, because then when Hawaii won, it could be Hawaii 5-0.
Okay, so back to week one thoughts. So back to week one thoughts and whatnot. Kind of piggybacking off of Tony for a moment, and then we need to take a break because we are heavy here in this first segment. He talked about Michigan State and what the Spartans were able to do defensively a little bit. Something else to keep note of, Jacoby Winman, the transfer from UNLV, linebacker / defensive end, had 4 sacks in that game. That's ties in with the second most in school history for a single game with those 4 sacks. And also Michigan State being able to rush just 4 and get to the quarterback. That bodes well, even though there are some secondary issues with injuries and whatnot. So Michigan State, that might have been the biggest pop off the page thing for the Spartans in week one, was they were able to get pressure on the quarterback without blitzing. So that's a big, big step forward. We'll see how it plays out as Michigan State gets ready to take on Akron. That one's a pretty big spread as well, 30-some points.
You know what you were saying there with the line being able to get pressure. If they can do that regularly, that makes your secondary better, because they don't have to play longer in their coverage. You know, the ball's getting out quicker. They might benefit with more picks or at least bad throws. So, yeah, that could be huge for Michigan State.
You get pressure with 4 and you can drop 7 into coverage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
even
pretty helpful.
Even the best quarterbacks are going to struggle sometimes there.
Yeah. So we'll see how it kind of evolves moving forward. But that's something to pay attention to when we talk about Michigan State, between all the injuries and everything going on. Yeah, all right. Let's move to the second quarter.
Hold on. I almost replaced all the audio with tweet, just to see what your reaction was, but I decided not to.
I would have gotten a tickle out of that.
Yeah,
you could have done that
once. And then after that, you'd be like, all right, Sam, this is horrible. Change it back.
All right. As we're talking some Big Ten football here, we're going to preview this weekend a little bit here in the second quarter. I believe there's only one real game of note. We'll get to that in a moment. But
it's Purdue, Indiana State, right?
You have Ohio State hosting Arkansas State. That spread's 43.5.
And
you
it should be.
You have Minnesota and hosting Western Illinois. I don't even see a spread posted at the time that we're recording this. Northwestern hosting Duke. The Wildcats, as we're recording this, have a spread of favored by 10. Penn State's hosting Ohio, the Bobcats, and they're favored by 25. Number 19, Wisconsin hosting Washington State. They're favored by 17. Maryland at Charlotte. That's right. Maryland's at Charlotte. Kind of an interesting scheduling quirk. Maryland's favored still by 27 at the time we're recording. Michigan State hosting Akron, the 14th ranked Spartans, favored by 34 heading into that weekend's game.
Are the Illinois Zips that rough?
Well, they did just in week one beat St. Francis of Pennsylvania, but in overtime, 30-23, that actually got through that.
So it should be an accurate spread is what it should be.
We'll see how it all plays.
Yeah.
Illinois hosting Virginia. The Illini favored by 4.5 there. Purdue and Indiana State. That's at Purdue, and there's no spread at this time, I'm showing. Rutgers hosting Wagner, no spread at this time. Nebraska hosting Georgia Southern. The Huskers favored by 23.5 points. Michigan hosting Hawaii, we talked about that. The Wolverines favored by 51. Indiana hosts Idaho, no spread at this time. We should mention we're recording this a little bit out, so they're probably are spreads by the time that you're seeing this. But the one that's actually maybe of interest, and I wanted to run through that schedule that way all the fans could know when or who their team is playing this weekend. But furthermore, the only game of note, as evidenced by the schedule we just ran through, Iowa State, the Cy-Hawk rivalry.
Is it one of note? Good Lord.
Oh, yeah. It's bad.
Only for the Cy-Hawk, right? That's why it's a big deal, right?
Well, and after the 7-3 barn burner that the Hawkeyes got the win out of, and I believe the Hawks are still favored. Let me look what the spread is at the time, but I believe they're favored by 3.5 points. Yeah, 3.5 points at the time of recording when they just beat South Dakota State by 4.
As long as their defense gets 2 safeties, they're good, right?
Well, now you're banking on more, right?
Like No, because how many games, honestly, how many games have you ever seen in your lifetime where 2 safeties were recorded in the same game? But I mean, it's happened, I know, but it's so rare. It's like a perfect game. Like perfect games are even more special no hitters, you know, and it's just, it doesn't happen. And no, it's like Fernando Tatis Sr. He holds a record that will never be broken. He hit 2 grand slams in the same inning.
Oh, that's a good trivia night.
And he hit it off the same pitcher.
Wow, he lasted a whole inning being batted around with 2 grand slams.
He gave up 2 grand slams. Jeez. Well, that's the kicker. Yeah, but yeah, I remember that happening. I'm like, that'll never be broken. I mean, the third time around, they're going to walk him.
Right.
Anyways, but like 2 safeties doesn't happen. So I don't know how they're favored, honestly, unless Iowa State's just a little bit of a dumpster fire as well. I don't know.
Tony?
Well, it is funny because on ESPN, the matchup predictor, so even though Iowa's favored, it has Iowa State winning 58.5% chance of Iowa State winning versus 41.5% chance of Iowa winning. But Iowa's favored in the spread. And I'm like,
so the favored team isn't even being picked.
No, not by that. Yeah, I was looking, I was like, wait a minute.
That's great.
What? Yeah. I think it will be a good game. This is one of those, no matter how good or it kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Iron Bowl or, you know, Michigan versus Michigan State. No matter how good or how bad the other team is, this is always an actual competitive game. And I do think that it is kind of worthy of being the only real, you know, Big Ten game that's going to actually be being played this weekend. I do want to give a quick shout out, though. Indiana got the win over Illinois last week.
Yes.
Best team in Indiana right now because Notre Dame lost, Purdue lost,
Tony.
Ball State really lost.
The only other Indiana teams that matter. Yeah, Tony. Ball State lost. Tony. They don't really count. Yeah.
I remember when I was growing up, Purdue beat Cal 35-7 in the opening week of the season, and the power rankings had Purdue number 1 in the country. Okay. I took my win. I cut out the newspaper. I still have it somewhere. Because Purdue is number 1 in the country. So you take this win, okay, and just hold on tight until, you know, next week.
Hey, I was so happy, though, for Tom Allen.
Oh, yeah, I was too. And honestly, it was one of those, I was watching it, and it was a close game at least the whole entire way. It wasn't like anybody got blown out. And then it was like, okay, my prediction's going to come true. Then I got a little hesitant when Illinois scored the touchdown. I was like, oh, I don't know if Indiana's going to be able to do it. And then they did it. I was like, woof. I was solid in my upset. I at least get one this year. I may not get very many more as far as upset picks, but that was my one I get.
And it was IU over Illinois.
Gotta love it. But let's for a moment go back to the Cy-Hawk rivalry, because for Iowa, one thing we haven't fully talked about yet, and we talked about some of the offensive issues, but I'm curious to see how this plays out, because we have a situation where in Kinnick Stadium last week, and this week's games at Kinnick Stadium as well, the offense was being booed by the second quarter, and that didn't stop through the entire game. Like, the fans were rather upset with what they were seeing, and you can kind of take it for your own interpretation whether they were booing quarterback Spencer Petras, they were booing offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz, they're booing collective, they're booing the whole thing. I'm not exactly sure how you want to pick it apart, but it's something to watch for, because this is a fan base that's already a little anxious seeing what they've seen, because the last couple of years, this has been kind of the same deal for what they've seen. That's going to be something to watch moving forward.
We all know Kurt Ferentz does what he wants. He's shown that in his career at Iowa. You know, he doesn't, you know, do change just for change's sake. He only changes when he thinks it needs to be done. I wonder if it's going to get, you know, if they struggle again offensively this week against Iowa State, and let's say they actually lose this week, that fan base is going to let them have it the whole time on Saturday when they, if they struggle. And I don't know if this is the kind of the, you know, will this be the so to speak, come to Jesus meeting that they have with Kurt and say, look, we need to change offensively, or this is going to be, you know, maybe your swan song. You know, I'm not saying that they're gonna, I'm just, this is me thinking this process through. Kurt Ferentz has been at Iowa for forever. I can remember him taking it from Hayden Fry, you know, taking over from him.
1999.
Yeah. And so, like, he's been pursued by the NFL, but he does what he wants. He's established his culture. He does what he wants. He doesn't just change for change's sake. This, I worry, because I love Kurt Ferentz. I've loved what he's done in Iowa. I mean, it's Iowa. I mean, football is what Iowa's known for. You know, if they're known for anything, well, I guess wrestling. They're hell of a wrestling school.
Yeah, it's true.
But of the major sports, so I don't know. I worry that they're going to struggle again, and then there's going to be more upheaval for either the ending of the Ferentz offensive coordinator or the head coach, one of the two.
Well, and before Tony jumps in here, for Spencer Petras now, and this Iowa offense as a whole, there has been one passing touchdown in the past seven games.
Oh, wow.
For Spencer Petras and the Iowa offense. In the last seven games, Petras and the Iowa offense have one touchdown, eight interceptions. So,
in fairness, how many times are they in the red zone attempting the pass? Well, you know, that would be my interest, is if he was struggling on completing passes inside the red zone, because those are designed for potential touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. I mean, every pass play you want a touchdown, but you don't anticipate a 90-yard touchdown every time. So inside the 20 into that red zone, I would be considered worried if he was really struggling.
Well, and kind of going in a different direction too, you watch that Purdue-Penn State game the past Thursday night, and you see Charlie Jones transfer in from Iowa and instantly go off for, what, 12 catches and 100-some receiving yards? Like
130-some receiving yards, yeah.
It's not that Iowa's offense doesn't have tools. He's been sitting there in Iowa, and things just haven't been used or utilized at all. So it's a red flag for sure. Tony, you can jump in.
Yeah, and I was actually looking, so last week, Iowa State took on Southeast Missouri State Redhawks. The final score was 42-10. So not like they played anybody big. But the overall stat differential from what Iowa State did against their opponent versus Iowa, it's sad. So Deckers, who is Iowa State's quarterback, went 25 of 31, 293 yards, four touchdowns and a pick to, you know, Petras's 11 of 25, 109 yards and an interception. ISU's running back Brock, 16 carries, 104 yards, a touchdown to Iowa's Williams, 24 carries for 72 yards. And then Iowa State's Hutchinson, eight receptions, 128 yards, three touchdowns versus Bruce the Fourth, who had five receptions, 68 yards. Iowa State passing 293, 176 rushing, and then yards allowed, they allowed 222 passing and 98 rushing. Now, Iowa has their edge in that. They allowed 87 passing yards and 33 rushing, but they were only able to throw for 109 and rush for 57. So this is one of those I really do. I don't know if we'll make a pick out of this or not. I'm going to pick Iowa State, and I'm going to pick Iowa State by at least 17 because I think wow. Iowa's defense, I think Iowa's offense is just that bad. You know, I think this is an Iowa State team, you know, kind of like you know, I don't know if we've alluded to this or not, but with Iowa struggling with them, you know, not able to really move the ball as far as throwing it goes, I feel like this Iowa State team has been in this position. They've had a lot of really good talent. You know, we saw Breece Hall a few years ago, you know, do really, really well. Now he's in the NFL with the Jets. I think this is an Iowa State team that's going to, you know, they're going to take advantage of this rivalry, and they're going to take advantage of Iowa still, I think, trying to figure themselves out as far as what to do offensively. And I think they're going to walk away with the win.
I think you're underestimating one thing, and it was what I alluded to with the Ohio State. If you want one side of the ball to struggle, it's your offense. And if your defense is firing, you can still win ball games. Now, Ohio mm-hmm. State has an elite offense that still at 50% production is five times better than Iowa's offense, it seems. So that's why they beat the number five team in the country by 11. I think Iowa wins this game 10-7. And I'm not even joking with that score
this.
That I think.
No, I love this, though.
I think they win 10-7 and they get a pick six. The defense pick six is Iowa State.
That
will make it to where it needs to be addressed. The offense needs to be addressed because you either need to get rid of your OC or Kurt, we got to go a different way because the offense can't handle this. The defense can't handle it.
The group chat on Saturday is going to be well and alive because we have one person taking Iowa State by 17 and the other person taking Iowa, still not covering, but by 3-7. So
I'm going to say 10-7, but if it was 17-14, like, you know, something really small.
You got a 3-point differential, basically.
Yeah, and it's going to be low, I think, because Iowa's defense is legit. Like, they're legit.
And it was last year. That's how Iowa got to number two last year. Yep. I mean, that secondary was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Jack Campbell might be one of the best linebackers in the country. Like, their defense is the real deal. But, yeah, to your point, the offense is just oof.
But you need to have the ability to have a defense that has that stellar defense. If they have an off game, you're still going to be able to win. That's why Purdue blew them out by 17 in Iowa City. Is Iowa's defense had a little bit of a struggle, but the offense couldn't do anything. So, therefore, they got blown out as the number two team in the country, you know? And I just think that's going to happen again. But I think Iowa right now, their defense is amazing. You went through those stats and my jaw, I don't know if it physically dropped open, but like it dropped.
Yeah.
The amount of yards, they let up under 150 total yards. Granted, South Dakota State, but under 150 yards in a college football game.
Yeah, that is impressive.
I think Iowa wins, but it's 3 points. And there will be upheaval about why the offense is still getting outscored by the defense.
This will be fun to see how this one plays out for sure with our show. we need to take a break. When we come back from halftime, we're going to talk a little college football playoff expansion as it was announced that it's approved and will be coming. We'll talk about that after this.
You are listening to Big Ten Plus Four, hosted on Anchor and StreamYard.
Hey, this is Russ.
This is Kyle.
This is Michelle.
From the Infectious Groove Podcast.
Join us every Monday for the most fun you can have with a music podcast. The Infectious Groove Podcast uses a positive and fun approach as we take time every week to share our jammy jams, then dig into a thought-provoking topic discussing all decades and genres of music. You can find the Infectious Groove Podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can head to infectiousgroovepodcast.com to find us there and subscribe. We might have a controversial opinion here or there, but we always have fun with it.
Oh, I'm sure I'll say something dumb.
Subscribe to the Infectious Groove Podcast, part of the Odd Pods Media Network.
Hi, I'm Tina Jaramillo.
And I'm Hillary Doherty.
And we host the Muck Podcast, where we discuss the dark and sometimes weird true stories in American politics.
Hey, Tina, did you know that Elvis crashed the Nixon White House for the sole purpose of getting a DEA badge, and it worked?
What? Or how a gun control advocate senator out of California engaged in gun trafficking with notorious gang leader Shrimp Boy?
Shrimp Boy, I remember him. Okay, so, you know, we cover all of that and more from maladies, madness, mischief, and murder in U.S. politics.
And we also host a bi-weekly interview segment called Lil Muck.
We interview politicians, journalists, activists, and others who share their experiences in politics.
Find the Muck Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and check us out on social media at the Muck Podcast.
All right, time for the third quarter. Nice work by Sam Sprunger there. That was the best transition we've had in a long time. That was really
well,
solid.
Well, I don't know. We use StreamYard, and I didn't realize it counts you down on the clip that's playing over on the right. I've always been looking at the little bar that goes through and tried to time it out, and I was always horrible. And then I looked, I'm like, I can hit it right at the... Learn it on the fly.
I was going to say, we live and we learn and we get a little bit better each time.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
Moving on to the third quarter, college football playoff. It is being expanded to 12 teams. As of now, it looks like it could be 2026 when this comes in. There are talks and momentum to try and speed that up. See if you can't make it 2025. I've even heard some rumblings of 24, but for the most part, they're looking in that window to see when it can be expanded to 12 teams. With the 12-team playoff format, you have six automatic qualifiers. So then six at-larges also being in there. There's rumblings of the on-campus sites for that first round of
games. I love
that
idea, by the way.
I do, too. And I feel like that's a big part. So Florida State LSU, we talked about that game. If that's not happening at the Superdome, but it's happening at Death Valley, like, imagine how much more, like, and it's just down the road. We have so many made-for-TV college games nowadays. It would be better on campus. Go ahead, Sam.
The one thing that kind of got me, though, is they said the first four games would be on site, but the top four teams get a bye.
Correct.
Wouldn't those top four teams want to host a game?
I would imagine so.
I would think you'd and bear with me. I mean, this may be way it plays out. Honestly, you could do the first four games where they play into those bye games, be some of the lower rung bowl games, like the RL Carrier Bowl or whatever. Make that a play in to the bye game to where those four bye teams host their game
at an on campus.
On campus. And then after that, your final four teams go into the two games, the two big bowl games, and then the championship game. It works out nicely, and it should be a reward to be a team that has a bye. You get to host a game.
Yeah. No, fair point.
That idea. Good job, Sam.
I was going to say.
Pat myself on the back.
No argument for me on that end. I love on-campus things, I agree. I think it would be a good reward to have about the home advantage.
Think about, like, and I don't know why it did, so forgive me for this. Think about Michigan, let's say, host, you know, they're good enough to be a top four team, and they host Georgia in the second round. Talk about, and it's in, like, January.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, what a game that would be, you know.
Oh, yeah, or potential game changer, because you have the element factor, you have a crowd factor, because think about it, Georgia country would probably travel pretty well, but I don't know.
They're paying top penny and they're not getting into as big. They'd be outside the stadium for sure.
Yeah. And not gonna lie, when I was stationed in the South with, you know, through the military, a whole lot of Southerners, it drops anywhere below like 60. They're throwing on winter coats. They're like, man, this is cold. No, you don't know cold. You got to.
Yeah, January in Michigan, try that.
Yeah, I remember last season. Well, actually, all the previous years, you'd sit there during the, like, pregame for one of the Big Ten football games. And a lot of times, like, over at Michigan State, you sit there, look out the booth, and you look down on the field, and it's 10 degrees outside and you have players warming up shirtless, and you're like, boy, I don't know. You guys are just born a little bit different to be able to handle this.
I like to think of it, when I was younger, I used to do kind of stupid stuff too. I just attribute it to young age naivete.
Same here, but boy, I don't think I could ever handle that kind of cold that way. Like I,
Yeah. Well, and that it would be huge. I think they really need to evaluate that aspect, because if you get those four play-ins, those lower rung bowls, it's not like they're playing in the Citrus Bowl and then going to, you know, to play Ohio State. Then they're playing in a smaller bowl that, you know, the Idaho Potato Bowl or whatever. And then they play into going to Ohio State, you know, I don't know, just a thought.
I like it.
But, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say off the top, Tony, what sticks out to you about the playoff expansion?
I think the fact that, you know, they're going to try to recognize each and every team from the Power Five conferences being able to join, which, you know, I know we kind of talked about it before the show started. I think this was more the Pac-12's like, hey, we can't die just yet. Like, now we have a viable spot going into the playoffs. Like, we have a chance. And I know Sam even mentioned the Big 12. It's and not to get too far off topic, it's one of those, I think, because we've seen Oregon talk to the Big Ten, we've seen Washington talk to the Big Ten. You know, Stanford, of course, is rumored, may or may not join. We'll see if that goes or not. And then UCLA may or may not be blocked, depending on what that board in California decides what they want to do.
Watch for Cal.
This keeps more of the conference. Yeah, Cal. Because I think that might be a thing where I know they had mentioned it's mainly because I think the state of California wants that extra income as well. It's like, hey, kind of spread the love type thing. So they may try to make it a package deal where Cal maybe gets thrown in there if, say, Washington doesn't meet the standards or somebody like that. But I do think they push this to – I don't think they put it out in 2026. I think they put it out in 2025. And the reason being is because, think about it, by 2024, you know, hypothetically, we're supposed to have USC and, you know, UCLA in the Big Ten by then. And 2025 will be the first year that we have Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC. And so by then, I think they're going to say, okay, we want the biggest names. We want the biggest brands available, at least being able to vie for a playoff spot. What better than to let all of these new teams now officially have, you know, more chances to be able to be in the playoffs and make more money. So that to me, I think they push it to be a little bit more, you know, a little bit sooner rather than later, but only by, I think only by about a year. Now, so you're, much to Dalton's so point, they may push it to 2024, but I think 2025 would be kind of the sweet spot.
I think they give them a year to play out the kinks, because don't both UCL or the Big Ten move and the SEC move both start in 24, correct?
No, SEC's 25.
Oh, okay. So it would be the first year after, or you know, like the year, first year, Oklahoma and Texas. I don't disagree that could be a very good possibility there. What I was saying about Cal is there's the whole, you know, Regents, Board of Regents, UC Board of Regents said that they can block UCLA moving if they wanted. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say watch out for Cal is there's the reason why they're both in the Pac-12 is they have an agreement that they'll constantly have the capability of playing together, you know, against each other, and being in the same conference ensures that. So I think, honestly, if the Regents say, well, hey, we're gonna block UCLA, I think the Big Ten jumps quickly to add Cal, because then they have another UC team in the conference that UCLA plays.
Fair enough.
I think that is a possibility that could happen if the Regents seem and you know the Big Ten's gonna know if they're gonna try to block them. You know, they're gonna give them enough time to let them know. And I think the Big Ten will jump at Cal. I think they'll be the big ad next. It may be along with Oregon, or along with Oregon and Notre Dame and Washington or whatever. But I think Cal is a crucial point of the next one to add UCLA. I know it's not a big thing when it comes to the sports additive, but being able to bring in that market of UCLA, I think it would be worth bringing Cal in for the Big Ten.
Fair enough. If I can take this conversation in another direction for a moment before we close out and get to parting shot or to the headlines, I do want to ask the question: do we all think this is good for the game? Do we think this is good for the sport? Are we fans of this? And I ask that for a couple of reasons. One, the regular season. How does this expansion to 12 teams affect the regular season? Do we feel like it dilutes the product that we've experienced in the regular season? And also, I mean, one of the things that I've talked with some people about, and they thought, you know, the college football playoff has become too regionalized because the South is good. And like outside of that, like not too many other corners of the country really get touched on, and maybe this allows some of that. A part of it too is like now with conference realignment, the regionalization doesn't really matter at all. It's just become a fully national product. When you're talking about LA to Piscataway, like it's just different now. But nonetheless, I do want to get your thoughts on, does this affect the regular season? Does this affect the college football we know? And maybe dilute at all, or is everybody gung-ho on this?
I wanted to make sure I didn't cut Tony off. I'll go ahead. I think it helps. I think it helps the regular season because, you know what, as soon as a team loses its second game, you immediately write them off. They're not going to be in the top four. They're not going to be probably in the top six unless they're just really awesome, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it dilutes it in the aspect of now you're going to have two lost teams in your playoff. Big flipping deal. You know, I mean,
You're going to have three lost teams.
And to me, that's okay too, because you know what happens? You really want to go into rebuilding Nick Saban, lose three games and not make the playoffs. That's when you call it a rebuild. You could honestly, there are Alabama teams that could lose three games and still make the playoff and probably win a game or two, if not the whole thing. So I don't think it dilutes it. I just think it allows for the best 12 teams to be in. That's honestly, I mean, there are granted, you're going to have 13 and 14 sitting there complaining because they got snubbed, but you have that with 69 and 70 in the NCAA tournament too. So you're going to have people that are unhappy and feel that they should have been there, but at least you're letting, okay, this two loss Notre Dame team would have beaten that one loss, whatever, you know, Houston team for say, well, now we don't have to worry about that. You know, Notre Dame at two losses, depending on who they lost to, Ohio State and Clemson. If they blew out the rest of their teams, they might be deserving to be at least in the first round. And then you know what? If they're not worthy, they'll get beat in the first round.
Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough. Tony, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's good. And much to Sam's point, I don't think it dilutes the game. And like Sam said, there are still going to be people that complain of, oh, well, what about people at, you know, 13 and 14? No. You know, what is almost always a list that people bring up, and no matter what sport, who's your top 10? And then, you know, you may have a couple people that you're like, well, you know, they're not there, but they're maybe, you know, on the outskirts at 11 and 12. If you can't be the 11th or 12th best team in the country, you probably don't deserve it. And I say that because, okay, if they guarantee six spots to the, you know, six conferences, so the Power Five, and then I know we talked about maybe they let, you know, the best out of the Group Five conferences in there as one of the conference champions, you still have, you know, six other spots that you can potentially grab. If you can't grab one of those six spots, you probably don't deserve to be in there because it you know, you're not to that level. And you know, if you want to complain that no, they need to be in there, okay, go get the crap kicked out of you by like number five Notre Dame. Have fun. You know, go get the crap kicked out of you if Georgia loses like a game and gets knocked down to number five. No offense to Oklahoma State, just using them as an example. If they're number 13 and they're complaining, okay, go to Athens, see how well that works out for you. Just let me know how much of a chance you guys have. But I'm a big proprietor of it because I've always liked the idea of iron sharpens iron. Because if the South is, you know, because I've heard this a lot, it's the SEC and everybody else. You know, if that truly is the case, then okay, you're going to have more of these frequent matchups of it's like, okay, now we have Ohio State versus Alabama, and it's not just, you know, one game. This can potentially be more of a frequent event, and it makes your competition around you better. Because, I mean, the Big Ten can beat up on each other all they want, and then they go out into the ACC, it may be a little bit different. They go out into the SEC, it may or may not be different. So it, to me, it gives a better quality because now, okay, now if you're in the Big Ten, you're going to be facing these SEC teams, and the SEC are going to be facing these Big Ten teams. So it's going to, they're going to kind of, you know, melt into each other, you know, take stuff away from each other. And to me, it's going to make, it's going to make a lot of it better. It's going to make a lot more of these games a lot more meaningful instead of just having, you know, okay, we've got two real bowl games and then the championship game and then a bunch of other meaningless bowl games where a lot of your seniors, probably even your juniors, sit out because they're potentially declaring for the draft, and it doesn't even matter at that point. You could even lose your coach to, you know, another team or retirement, and that bowl game still doesn't matter.
Well, and let me go ahead here, and this isn't even really my belief, but just in for the sake of playing devil's advocate and playing the counterpart, what if I raise to you that maybe instead of the thought process, and this is to both of you to kind of consider and retort back what you would make to this argument, but instead of maybe viewing this through the framework of in search of an absolute national champion on a year-to-year basis, but search looking at this through the framework or prism of college football tradition, pageantry, keeping it what it is. Because we say that it is more meaningful when we talk about regular season. I know you kind of laugh with a smile because NIL and everything else has already wrecked some of that and dented some of that. But my point is, you take a look back at some of the classic moments. Look back at 2015, Michigan State and Michigan in Ann Arbor, trouble with the snap. That game meant a lot because it was for the Paul Bunyan Trophy, but it also meant a lot because those two teams were vying for a college football playoff spot. And those two teams were right there in the running kind of late in October or mid-October to try and make a move for the college football playoff. So besides just winning the Paul Bunyan Trophy and getting a classic ending, you also had the magnitude, the significance of the fact that you still were in a college football playoff hunt behind that, and you knocked out your rival from that spot. You to go back to 2018, I believe it was, the Tyler Trent night for Purdue. Like, that game meant a lot because of Tyler Trent. That game meant a lot because you finally beat Ohio State, and that's just about as rare as it gets whenever you can knock off the Buckeyes, especially in that kind of fashion. But also, it kicked the Buckeyes out. And, like, that, there's a significance of value maybe behind some of the games and behind some of the emotion that the playoff has kind of weighed into some of those games. What would you both say in retort to maybe that you're taking away the luster and some of the significance of these regular season games?
Tony?
I see what you're talking about. I would say it would and it wouldn't, because you could still have that to where, okay, say it's Michigan State versus Michigan. You know, whoever wins, you know, they could be number three and the loser could drop down to like number seven. So that could be the difference between you getting a bye week and not getting and having to, you know, host another game and continue to play throughout the year. So to me, it kind of reminds me a little bit, and this is where I think that they're, you know, almost mimicking like the NFL playoffs, as far as it will still matter, because again, it may or may not still be one of those, you know, it may be a difference in seeding for both teams. It may only be a difference in seeding for one, because you know, Michigan could be number two. If they lose, okay, now Michigan's down to like seven, down to eight. You know, they go from having a bye to being out of it. So I think that competition, that luster is still there. I could kind of see people arguing, you know, it's not as much, or it only is because it's a playoff. No, I think it'll still be there. You know, I think the other argument will be it'll be worth more because of there's more on the line, just the same. Because we don't get a whole lot of those games where it's, you know, what, you know, hey, whoever wins, this is going to determine who gets in. We don't have a whole lot of those now because there's only four playoff spots. It's, you know, pretty much whoever loses probably isn't going to go in the playoffs this year. And that's just unfortunately how it is, because now it's so, you know, you can only have one loss. If everybody else has one loss, then okay, now you're back on a neutral playing field. You know, and we saw that last year. It's like Cincinnati had to go undefeated. And even then it's like, we don't know if we really want to bring it or not now, but it gives more opportunities. But I see your point though, where I think people may complain that it's not as meaningful, I guess.
Sam?
I don't care. Honestly, I as a Purdue fan, we beat Ohio State. I don't care that it kept them out of the playoffs. We beat Ohio State. That's all that matters. You know, when I was in college, I saw Drew Brees beat Ohio State to go to the Rose Bowl. Yeah, it didn't officially get them to the Rose Bowl, but they had to beat IU the next week, and that was a given, basically, for as good as Purdue was playing. It wasn't even necessarily that if Purdue would have lost, it would have been heartbreaking because it was Ohio State. It wouldn't have been because, oh, we missed out on the Rose Bowl. Don't get me wrong. I was elated that they got to the Rose Bowl because of that. But honestly, if you can't get up for a game, whether it costs them a playoff game, a spot or not, if they're like, well, we're going to make the playoffs anyways, you still don't want to lose, do you?
Right.
So have some pride, you know, and so.
Yeah. So you just don't care. You're checked out of that.
I don't care. It's one of those that we are so past tradition that I don't care anymore. If you're going to treat it like a pro league, let's treat it like a pro league and just get on and go. Let's do an Indiana football style tournament where everybody makes the playoffs and just play the whole season out, you know, at the end of the year, whatever. I don't care. As long as I've got good college football every week, it doesn't matter to me.
Okay. Well, good enough. So that, I mean, sticking with it, you're fans of the 12 team expansion and, We'll see what year that comes, as I'm sure details will be coming. We'll be talking about that more and more here on Big Ten Plus 4. All right, real quick, let's hit a break and get to the fourth quarter in the headlines. All right, we are getting to the headlines. And
wrong person, sorry.
You're good. So we'll start off with Sam Sprunger and the Sam Sentinel. What do we got?
Well, I have I posted something yesterday, or we posted something yesterday, about a little girl who had been diagnosed with leukemia, and her name is Addison Douglas. And I posted this through the Big Ten Plus 4 Twitter account, but she was diagnosed with leukemia, and I guess one of their other son had open heart surgery for a heart condition, and he's got extended medical things as well, that doctor's appointments and stuff. There's a link that I shared, that basically it's called mealtrain.com. And then, the link is in the tweet as well. And what it does is it buys meals and supplies meals for this family while they've got to do this. That way it takes the pressure of preparing their meals, you know, during these times. I mean, the last thing I want to do is go through this with a child, but then also you got to remember that you've got to provide for the rest of your family with meals and things. So it takes an added pressure off of the family. There's a little video clip on there that it's of her in her hospital bed chanting "Boiler up" and clapping. It's beautiful, and it touched me a little closer, because she's, you know, a Purdue fan, but like we posted, that the Big Ten is not just a conference where we hate each other. We're a community where if a school's fan is in need, that we can reach out and kind of help them get through trying times. So go check out the Twitter page at Big Ten Plus 4. Spell out the plus, Dalton. Don't put the plus sign. but put that, or go in there. It'll be the pinned tweet at the top of our page for the time being. I know Rafael Davis retweeted it for us. So hopefully we can get this family to the goal that they're hoping, and help them concentrate their time and effort towards getting their children healthier. So that's the Sam Sentinel.
It's very neat. Very, very good piece there of the Sam Sentinel. I believe we have Tony with us, and it's Tony Tribune. I'm between Times and Tribune. I got to get that squared away.
So I didn't even think about Times, Tony. Tony Times.
Yeah, I didn't either. It was one of those. I was like, okay, I need something news, like newsy. It's like Tribune works. I almost thought about Times. I was like, too close to like Danny Dimes. We all know how Danny Dimes is. If we watch NFL, I don't want to be associated with that. I just can't do it. Hold on one second. Because I was not prepared for this at all. I was trying to make sure that my headphones worked. I connected to the Wi-Fi and whatnot.
Way to go, Tommy.
I know, I was not prepared.
Time's ticking. Come on.
But I do know that Rutgers is actually, Greg Schiano is supposed to, he's actually supposed to be getting ready to break a milestone marker for Rutgers. I just can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
I bet Dalton knows.
It's like I'm expecting him to.
Well, we'll find out what that is. He's actually one win away from tying Frank Burns as the winningest coach in Rutgers school history. So Greg Schiano is knocking on that door.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive considering, I mean, this is Rutgers. This is somebody that I know for a lot of people who we, you know, in the Big Ten, mainly in football, were like, this is a Rutgers team that has underperformed, hasn't really done super well. And I don't know if you guys remember Greg Schiano when he was in the NFL. He was not great for the Buccaneers. Like, his first year, he was okay. And then after that, everything went downhill. But, I mean, I've liked what he's done with Rutgers. Rutgers has at least been competitive in a lot of their games, at least on the lower end of it. Now, when they face, you know, Ohio State, that's just, you know, that's...
Nobody's competitive with Ohio State.
Exactly. And unless you're in the SEC, yeah, not really competitive. So, it's one of those, I'm happy that Greg Schiano is going to be able to potentially get this win. I think they should this weekend. We'll see. But I'm hoping it gets Rutgers at least back to relevancy, because we know in basketball last year, Rutgers basketball team, that was a dangerous team. But I know, Sam. But no, I'm hoping Greg Schiano gets his win, and hopefully he brings relevance back to Rutgers Big Ten football.
And again, for Greg Schiano, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
But they play Wagner this weekend, so that's something to keep in mind, because they're favored for that game, so that it could very well happen. Go ahead, Sam.
I was just going to say, you know, there are some people that are just made out for college better than they are pros. You know, Greg Schiano, you know, Nick Saban.
Nick Saban,
Bobby Petrino,
Urban Meyer, that we found out last week.
Yeah, Urban Meyer.
That's a good example.
Yeah. Anyways, so go ahead, Dalton. I believe it's your turn.
Yes, the Dalton Daily, and I know we had a little bit of fun with it earlier, and we kind of had tongue in cheek fun with the Big Ten and its punting, but I really want to tip the cap to the Big Ten and its punters. Again, the Big Ten so far has had 77 punts. To this point in
through
time.
1 week.
77 punts, and the average is about 44 yards per punt. Keep in mind, we've seen at Michigan State in week one, we saw a 70-yard punt that went into the end zone from Bryce Behringer. We saw for Adam Corsack and Rutgers, we made fun of the fourth and goal punt, but he did pin it on the three. And now for Adam Corsack and the Scarlet Knights.
Gain of 7 yards.
Corsack has had 131 consecutive punts without a touchback.
Holy
Listen
cow.
Again, 131 consecutive punts without a touchback, according to the Rutgers media notes after that game. Yeah. So keep drawing this in. You had Bryce Amore make a difference as the Penn State punter in that Penn State Purdue game that we've talked about earlier on. He kept pinning Aiden O'Connell and the Boilermakers back near their own goal. And then who am I forgetting? Oh, the Iowa punter, of course, who had 10 punts in week one, and I believe 8 of them were inside the 20.
He's taking this week off because his leg's tired.
he was asked after the game. He's like, how many times do you want to punt next week? And he's like, none. And he goes, oh, maybe one or two just so I can do something. But like, I know we have some fun with the punters, but these punters have legitimately changed the games that they've been in.
Sure.
And so I want to tip the cap to the punters. The Big Ten punters absolutely brought the boom in week one, and what they do moving forward will be a lot of fun to watch, because we're talking about some elite stuff there. Michigan State punter punting it over 70 yards. Rutgers punter, 131 consecutive punts without
That's
a touchback.
Insane.
Like, this is an elite level of punting that's on display with the Big Ten Conference. And if the Ray Guy Award goes anywhere else but to one of these guys in the Big Ten, we protest.
I did the quick calculation while you were talking. 77 punts divided by 14.
That's what is it,
five and a half punts per team. And we were just talking, Iowa kicked 8 times or at least 8 times or whatever.
They punted 10, I can confirm.
10 times, sorry. So, like, but it's just insane. You know, that means, you know, some other teams didn't punt as much, but still 5.5 on average per team.
Well, that's
5.5 per average.
Minnesota had what, New Mexico State in week zero, and they had another game. And so Minnesota so far has only had one punt. A little too much offense there, PJ Fleck. Can you slow the boat?
Look who
down?
They're playing. Come on, ease up.
But we need to help these numbers.
Yeah, well,
point.
The punter needs the punter needs some work, PJ. Calm your offense down.
Hey, I'm just Take saying it stays true. Minnesota winning the West. You know, they only had to punt once. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, New Mexico State.
Win is a win, sir.
Idaho A&T.
Tony's on the boat. He's paddling.
On the boat.
All right. Wow. That'll do it for another edition of Big Ten Plus Four. Sam, on the way out, you want to let everybody know where they can find us?
Yeah, I mentioned Twitter, Big Ten Plus Four. Spell it out, Dalton. Don't put the plus sign. Plus Four. Then Facebook, Big Ten Plus Four. Find us at oddpodsmedia.com. Every Friday, we stream on ASAP Network. We're on their channel. Follow them for all sports content. Follow us. Find us audio-wise in the afternoon on Fridays. Yeah, there we go. I mean, that was my crash course right there, Dalton. Did I do all right?
You did great. We're going to give you an
A.
I'm
getting fired. Good.
We are also on TikTok. Same way, Big Ten Plus Four. Just got to spell out the plus. So we are on TikTok, so you may see us on there as well.
I don't go to the TikTok, so I can't really attest to that.
I feel like Dr. Evil in that Austin Powers movie. We're hip. We're cool.
We're hip. We're cool.
I'm hip.
So good. All right. From all of us here at Big Ten Plus Four, thank you all for tuning in and joining us for this week. For Tony Hollinsworth, Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. Until next time, we'll talk to you later.
See ya.